Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, coming up this hour, we got the good and the bad and the dumb from the weekend that was in the sports world. We'll talk more about the NFL and get into the college football landscape. There's still more to dissect. We talked in hour number one about the SEC title game and Alabama's preparation for that. But some other games that went down: Michigan's utter dominance of Iowa in the Big Ten Conference Championship, Cincinnati getting its job done and becoming the first non-Power 5 conference team to make the college football playoff. And then, of course, the heartbreak for Oklahoma State. They pile on pitch away from getting into the playoff, but instead, Baylor wins the Big 12, and kudos to the Bears for two outstanding goal line stances in that game. We're going to get to that, all that coming up, and again, really dissecting into the NFL. Tonight, Monday Night Football, and it is a fantastic matchup. The Patriots and the Bills, New England riding a six-game win streak. They are a half a game up on Buffalo in the division. Winning, again, six straight games for a team that is dealing, that has been starting a rookie quarterback. Everything that Bill Belichick has done this offseason, right, made us think, all right, well, they're going all in now. But the decision to start a rookie quarterback had an opportunity to backfire, and it has not done that. And what Josh McDaniels is doing with Mac Jones is really amazing. But the Buffalo Bills, who have been waiting for an opportunity for that division to just give them an opportunity to run through it, it has not come. They had 1 year off, and now the Patriots are back as a thorn in their side. Well, how much of a thorn in their side will they be? We'll have Monday Night Football tonight. I'm really, really looking forward to this. Plus, if you like defense, you should like this one. They're the top two scoring defenses in the NFL. I think the Patriots are allowing a little less than 17 a game. The Bills are allowing around 17 a game, a little over 17 a game. They're really neck and neck in terms of how many points they're giving up per game. So, again, but just from the standpoint of watching the Patriots go through the 2021 season with a rookie quarterback and being one of the better teams in the NFL, well, tonight we shall see. All right, coming up, it's the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue, and then more analysis from week 13 of the NFL as we continue as Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb, the Monday edition here on Wake Up Call. Glad you could be with us. Because we've got a lot of football to get to, but we got the good, the bad, and the dumb. So what's the good of the day?
The good of the day is that Mac Brown or Shane Beamer is going to have to take one for the team.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
So we have all these fun bowls games coming up, right?
Yes.
And traditionally at the end of the game in all of football, you know, the winning coach gets a Gatorade bath.
Right.
Now with these fun bowl games, like, you know, our favorite, the Tony the Tiger Frosted Flakes Bowl, whatever. I can't remember the actual
Tony
name.
Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl.
There
in
it
El Paso.
Is.
Yes.
You know, the winning coach gets dumped with Frosted Flakes. Or the Cheez-Its Bowl, they get dumped with Cheez-Its instead of Gatorade.
Right.
Well, we have the Duke's Mayo Bowl coming up, featuring North Carolina and South Carolina. Last year, it ended in disappointment because the winning coach was, in fact, dumped by Gatorade. So, Danny Morrison, the executive director of the Duke's Mayo Bowl, laid down the gauntlet and promised a $10,000 donation to the charity of whomever takes a mayo bath at the end of the game.
Okay, here's the thing. I like mayonnaise, but I don't know if I'd want to swim in mayonnaise.
Come on. You take one for the team, don't you?
For $10,000, I would.
For a $10,000 donation.
It's not disgusting. I mean, I like mayonnaise. It would be uncomfortable and a little weird. And probably a little gross, but for $10,000, I would totally do it.
I mean, do you still do the on-field interview after the end of the game if you're covered in mayo?
Ooh, depends,
or the
right?
press conference at the end of the game?
Yeah.
If you're the reporter, do you just be like, no, you stand over there.
No. See, now, if it was the Miracle Whip Bowl, I wouldn't go anywhere near that garbage. That is a sin against mankind, that stuff. But I would if it was the Duke's Mayo Bowl. I wouldn't have any problems with that.
Yeah.
We have a jar of Miracle Whip in my house because my wife loves it. And we also have some mayonnaise in the house because I love it. And we are that family. And my wife thinks mayonnaise is disgusting. I think Miracle Whip is disgusting.
I don't have a preference, but I know we have mayo because my wife has a preference. Yeah.
You know, here's the other thing about that, by the way. Miracle Whip, and God bless them, I hate the stuff. They know people hate the stuff, and they did a whole ad campaign on talking about people who can't stand it living in houses with people who love it. Like, they just found famous people that were married and were like, I hate it, she loves it, he loves it, I hate it. And it worked for them. But no, if it was Miracle Whip, no. Duke's Mayo, yeah, fine.
But so, you wouldn't want a mayo bath after... After successfully beating your opponent?
For $10,000 to charity, I would take it. If it wasn't, I'd be like, no, give me the cool, refreshing taste of Gatorade.
And you know what else I love about these bowl games, too? The matchups that they grab.
Right.
Like, you know, it's like written in the stars. Because here, for the Duke's Mayo Bowl, which I don't think has anything to do with Duke University.
Duke's the company that makes the mayonnaise.
Yeah. But it just happens to be North Carolina versus South Carolina.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Both teams a lousy 6-6.
Yep.
But for North Carolina, I think more was expected. I think Sam Howell's their quarterback, and they were expected to do good things. South Carolina is a good 6-6 because they weren't really expected to do much.
I love the disparity there.
Right, I'll take that one. There you go. What's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is spitting.
Spitting?
Spitting.
Okay, depends on the context.
It needs to stop.
Anywhere?
Well, in a stadium.
Okay.
Okay? Because I have two stories for you. One is the University of Louisiana Lafayette fans, mainly the students, let's be honest here, were spitting on Appalachian State players and staff during the Sun Belt Championship.
Oh, were they really?
Now, the thing is that their fans, the stands, are literally right on top of the bench.
Oh, that's awful.
You look at the sideline for the Appalachian State fans. They had to set up those little canopies, those tents, kind of at an angle. I mean, maybe it's to help block out the sun, too, but it's also to block out, you know, people spitting on them.
Oh.
And then the other story is that the Toronto Argonaut players almost recreated Malice at the Palace.
Oh, did they really?
Because I know it was one fan, definitely, but there could have been a couple fans were spitting beer on the players as they were heading back into the tunnel. So those players weren't having it and decided to jump into the stands and confronted some of the fans.
Yeah, heck no. Jump right in there.
Yeah.
I don't think the Appalachian State thing, that is so terribly immature. I just can't imagine. Like that, like that's a like cool, the, like you think that that's a cool thing to do.
The Toronto Argonauts one, I mean, you know, you get a couple of drunk fans. I mean, they're spitting beer.
Yeah,
you're chugging a beer and they're like, just blowing it on them. I can,
what
I'm not excusing
Lafayette,
it. I can see
that's a term for endearment.
Maybe it is.
You know, it's like we respect our opponents, and then they go, oh no, that's a thing they do. It's they like that.
Yeah, Chicago.
Oh, got it. That's crazy. Oh, yeah. But the beer, okay.
I know. I mean, you had a Malice in the Palace moment. Could have. It didn't. I mean, the fans or the players, you know, thankfully didn't escalate. Like one of the fans just all of a sudden came out swinging at a player.
But they're wearing football gear, right?
Yeah, no. And the player just literally pinned him up against the wall until security got there.
Right.
And he's like, I'm not swinging at you. Go ahead and hit me. I'm covered in pads. It's not going to hurt me. You know, and plus I'm an athlete and five times taller than you. So you're fine.
Right. Gotcha. All right. What is the dumb of the day?
Now, the dumb of the day, I don't know if this is a more local story here or if this made national news at all. And I'm waiting. There needs to be more to this. Right.
Right.
So we've all heard of Joel Osteen.
Yeah. Yeah. The preacher.
He has a mega church here in Houston. He has come under fire a bunch of times Because one, I mean,
he had, a couple of times?
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, one, you know, he makes like $100 million a year or something like, I mean, something ridiculous. I don't know if he makes that much, but I mean, it's ridiculous the amount of money he makes. Another time was when Hurricane Harvey was going on. They did not open the doors to allow people in while Mattress Mac was opening all his stores.
Yeah, but real quick, not to.
I know.
I mean, that's a bad thing. Was that an insurance issue, though?
I don't think it was an insurance issue.
Okay. I thought it was because they didn't. Their insurance for kind of said you couldn't and whatever.
I mean,
but they still should. Like, it doesn't matter if your insurance says no. Just deal with the consequences and let people in to save their lives.
But this church. This latest story dates back to 2014, okay? They had filed a police report that hundreds of thousands of dollars were stolen from them. Like, somebody actually literally broke into a safe at Lakewood Church, which is Joel Osteen's church, and stole hundred envelopes that contained hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Okay.
A few earlier last week or mid last week, a plumber was fixing a toilet in the church. I had to remove the toilet to fix one of the tiles because one of the toilets was wobbly. And so he was removed the toilet, going to replace the tile and make sure, you know, everything stayed. So as he was removing the tile, he removed some insulation. Envelopes just started falling out of the wall.
Oh, so somebody was stealing within the church and stuffing the envelopes in the wall behind the toilet.
Yeah.
Are they blaming Joel Osteen for this?
No, it's just, I mean, they're not really pointing the finger at anybody. The plumber immediately contacted the maintenance man and goes, hey, man, I have like five envelopes here that's just filled with cash and checks. And they were like, lo and behold,
we were missing that in 2014.
Yeah, they haven't released the amount of money that was found, but, you know, they were saying that it's probably going to end up being around the same amount of money. So I'm curious about, okay, was this an inside job, or how does one, you know, how do you put an envelope in a bathroom wall that's already sealed?
Well, okay. Well, does anybody know if there was construction in the bathroom in 2014?
During that time, I mean, that's why I say there's more to the story that hasn't came out yet.
So I find it interesting that whoever decided to take this money didn't need it for anything.
Right. Or was he placing it there, hiding it there.
Thinking he would need it, and they went, oh, crap.
There was a terrible Martin Lawrence movie. I don't know if it was Blue Streak or something like that, where he was an ex-con, or he was a convict who hit a diamond in a building, and then he went to jail, and then later, when he got out of jail, that building became a police station.
Oh, and then I got you.
And then he posed as a detective being transferred to from another station to that station, so he can go and retrieve said diamond.
So that's what could have happened here.
Maybe that's what was happening here, okay. Is that they hid the money in the most, you know, unlikely place, in the building itself, so that way they could never get caught and then just weren't able to get back to. I don't know.
I don't know the inner soul of Joel Osteen at all. I don't know the man. I don't know if he's. I've never even seen
maybe
the show.
Maybe he hid that money to claim insurance on top of that?
I'm looking. So that's what I'm thinking. Either a couple things here. Either one. Because he sells a lot of books and he does a lot of speaking tours and that's where he makes his income, he doesn't need that kind of money. But two, you never know. People are rich all the time. They steal money all the time.
Yeah.
But two, there's a lot of hands in the cookie jar in a big operation like that. And you wonder if somebody wasn't getting paid enough or did it too many volunteer hours and found their way to thinking that they were going to get that money a little bit later. Down the road.
I'm just curious, what was happening in 2014? Did he need some insurance? Because, I mean, if you claim, that's a big enough amount that, you know, you can get money from insurance to back that up, right?
Sure, yeah.
You know, because if somebody broke into your safe.
I know this. If I worked at a place and I stole a bunch of envelopes with money in it, and I said, I'm going to hide this for a couple of years. I'm going to wait till the heat dies down. Then I'm going to get my money. And I put it in a wall, and then somehow, some way, word got out that that particular bathroom was being worked on. I would try to find my way to that money. You know, it's kind of like when the mob kills a guy and then buries him, and they're like, 10 years later, they're like, they're putting condos on that lot. And then you have to go back and dig up the skeleton. Like that, I would be concerned that, oh, that's where I hit the money all those years ago, and they're working right on the toilet.
Right.
Right? Then I'd have to find a way to go back there to make sure that the plumber doesn't find my stash.
Maybe it was him that was like, you know, if I keep chipping away at this tile, you know, eventually it'll come loose and I will be able to just go to the bathroom for an extended period of time, an extended session, if you will, and be able to grab all this money, all this
cash.
By the
way, I would be an atrocious criminal. I would be caught 10 seconds after I decided to commit a crime.
Yeah.
I just don't have a criminal mind. I'm not saying I'm a smart guy that I might do these things with a brain like mine. I'd get caught 5 seconds after I started it. I'd probably walk out the front door with the envelopes going, I'm taking these home. Like, that's probably what I would do. Yeah, I wouldn't even think of, like, storing them in a wall for a couple of years.
Like, for whatever reason, my son used to do when we would go to church, and if he was sitting there, he would just grab a whole stack of envelopes. I'm like, what are you doing with this? Like, I just want to take them. I'm like, why do you want to take them? There's nothing on these envelopes. Yeah, I know. I just need them. I need them for home. I'm going to write letters when I get home.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, he was three or four. Who cares?
All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Coming up, more from the NFL Week 13. Maybe not so much surprises, but some movement in the terms of the playoff standings as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Need gift ideas? The Holiday Gift Guide has something for everyone on your list of prices under $15, like a pair of Mechanics Wear black-coated winter gloves, a Power Torque two-piece magnetic tool holder bar, a Slime digital tire gauge, and much more. Check out the Holiday Gift Guide for good ideas at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store at O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. By the way, is the Heisman Trophy race over now? Is Bryce Young just going to win this thing? The Heisman Trophy,
Young?
One of the greatest awards anybody could receive, has been so died down this season because there has not really been a front runner.
I can't remember the kid's name, but I thought it was going to be the quarterback from Pitt.
Oh, Kenny Pickett?
Kenny Pickett.
No. I think he could win it.
No, did you see that run? The fake slide?
Well, yes, but that is not going to win you the Heisman.
That's Heisman highlight right there.
Bryce Young, according to the odds, a 3,000-to-1 favorite to win. Aiden Hutchinson of Michigan, plus 2,000. Kenny Pickett, plus 2,500. C.J. Stroud of Ohio State, plus 3,000. And Matt Corral of Ole Miss, plus 5,000. So Bryce Young, clear the favorite. Now, you know what? Do you know why you don't see quarterbacks do that fake slide often? Because they tear ACLs. That looked like he shouldn't have survived that. The way he fake slid and then reversed course while he was sliding down and stayed up. That's a twisted knee with anybody over the age of, I don't know, 25. Like, he can do it because he's young. That was a great move, though.
It was.
Just when you think you've seen everything in sports, like, just this is like the first time I've ever seen a fake slide like that. That was brilliant. That's like breaking ankles in basketball.
Now, if I'm a
fantastic.
If I'm a Heisman voter, I'm going Hutchinson.
You're going Hutchinson?
Why not?
Go defense.
Go defense.
Why not?
Because I don't feel like, I already see the kid's name already escaped me from Alabama.
Bryce Young. Yeah.
I don't think he did anything extraordinary this year that's like, maybe he did enough.
Well.
It wasn't like he led Alabama to a 13-0 season and just were blowing opponents out.
You don't have
out.
To do that, though.
Oh, I know you don't.
The year Tebow won the Heisman, they went 7-5.
Yeah, but he was lighting it up, though.
But you don't have to win the national title to be the number. You don't have to be
Joe
Burrow. He cried
at the press conference, Tony.
Yeah, but my thought is, I think what you watched Saturday. Okay, so listen, I would agree with you about Bryce Young if nobody else was the front runner going away, right? If we had had a Joe Burrow like player, then I don't think he closes the gap.
Yeah.
But this has not been a traditional Heisman Trophy type of season where you have week 10 or 11, we're like, oh, clearly these two guys are the favorites or whatever. Sometimes these things are decided with the last thing I saw is the best thing I saw.
Well, it's to be honest with you, it's one of those Heisman Trophy seasons that they could have given it out and we wouldn't have known. I feel like it's so subdued this year.
It's been very subdued.
That, yeah. I mean, they could have said, yeah, the Heisman was announced earlier today, and we're like, okay.
Again, I know
that happened.
I go back to this whole, the way the Heisman conducts its votes, right? I'll compare it to Major League Baseball. You have a bunch of, you know, when the Hall of Fame ballots are introduced, right? You have a bunch of young people that sort of are going against the trend of the old timers who are like, the old timers were like offended by steroids, but the younger generation was coming in, like, we're not so offended. But the old timers get removed if they're not actively covering baseball, right? Like, you have to have a certain level of criteria to keep your vote. The Heisman vote, they give it to you, and then they rarely take it away. So if you get a vote, you tend to keep the vote. Even if you don't, you're no longer a beat writer or whatever, you tend to keep the vote. I know a lot of people who have a Heisman Trophy vote that aren't in a press box every single Saturday, that aren't, you know, in front of a TV watching seven games at once, right? They just have a vote because there's usually a few hundreds and hundreds of votes, thousands of votes per region of the country. And so what I think is that going into the SEC title game, there was no bigger hype for a team as what they did, what they were identified as, than Georgia and their defense, right? Like, you can look at Michigan. There wasn't an overwhelming identifier to Michigan. There wasn't an overwhelming identifier to even Cincinnati or Oklahoma State or whoever. But Georgia, everyone knew why Georgia was the number one team in the country. Georgia was the number one team in the country because they had the historic defense that we hadn't seen in a long, long time. That kind of defense that is so good in an age of college football where the emphasis is on quarterbacks, the emphasis is on offense, that Georgia's defense was one of the better defensive units in the history of the game. So then you get Bryce Young in that game on a high-profile game now. National television and a lot of interest because everybody knows if this game goes Alabama's way, they've got two teams in the playoff. But if Alabama loses, there's a good chance that it could be a little bit more chaotic, if you will. And Bryce Young had his Heisman moment. He had 286 passing yards, 40 rushing yards, and 3 total touchdowns. Oh, that was in the first half of that game. And he did the second half without John Michie, and they still pulled out a win. He torched that defense. And I do think if you're a Heisman voter, put your mindset in the Heisman voter, and you're not sold on Kenny Pickett, and you're not sold on C.J. Stroud, you know, you're not sold on Matt Corral, you're not sold on Aiden Hutchinson. These are great players, and they've had great seasons, but you're not quite sold on them. You could choose any one of them. You're not locked into one as your number one guy. And then you see that performance that Bryce Young puts on against the number one defense in the country and one of the top defenses is in a long, long time, I think you just go, yeah, him. And I think that's who you vote for. Now, I'm putting myself in the mind of a Heisman Trophy voter who's not locked in. There are people obviously going to be locked in on every single one of those guys. I am sure if I went to the northeast part of the country, there's going to be a ton of guys that are going to vote Kenny Pickett, the quarterback. This guy is next level good, right? And he just won just led his team to the ACC championship game. He's good. He's really good. And C.J. Stroud had a phenomenal year until they met with Michigan. But I think in those high-profile games, I think they matter. They shouldn't because it's a year-long award. But I think Bryce Young on the biggest stage delivered the biggest, you know, probably the biggest moment of them all. But who knows? I mean, again, I don't know. I don't know how many ballots were cast before the championship game. There are old timers who don't like doing that either. They'll try to throw their vote in before the championship game. They don't like the extra game. The young people, they don't care. They'll deliver it later. So we'll see. I don't know. It seems like he's a clear favorite, but again, I'm not sure. Stroud was my vote for a while before they lost to Michigan. That would have been my vote.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I didn't have Bryce Young on the radar until Saturday.
But let's face it, it's gonna go to an offensive player. It's usually a quarterback. You know, every once in a while, running back. Extreme rarity is the wide receiver.
Yeah. Although we had it last year with Devontae Smith.
Yeah. And defense never gets it.
The defense never gets it. And sometimes Ndamukong Suh or Manti Te'o, they're like, they've really made a strong case. I'd love to see a defensive player win that game. I really, really would. I'd really love to see a defensive player win that award. I think it could. you know. So it could be Will Anderson, too. He had a big season for Alabama. Put him in the running as well. All right, coming up, more from the NFL as we continue on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is SportsNap Radio on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. NFL tonight. So are you looking forward to this game, Ron Culver? The Patriots and Bills, just as an entertainment option?
I mean, you know what? Given the games that we had this weekend, I went into this weekend not thinking we were going to get anything special.
Yeah, right.
And then we got some really good, especially that late game, afternoon slate of games.
Yeah, we did. Those were good.
Your Steelers and Ravens or Seahawks, Niners, the way those games ended were just fantastic. I can't wait for tonight.
I'm really looking forward
to
tonight.
This was the game that we all put on the marker and said, hey, you know what? If you have stuff to do this weekend, fine, go do it. Yeah. But don't miss Monday night.
Monday night, man. I think that the Bills, I don't want to say there's pressure or whatever, but there's got to be a feeling like,
there's pressure.
Kidding me?
There's pressure.
Like we've been dog mat to this team forever and ever.
Yeah.
And now they're back again. We don't even get a minute to breathe.
Yeah. What have we been saying all
driving
along?
Crazy.
Like the only break they got was a COVID year of football.
COVID year of football with Cam Newton as their starting quarterback.
Bills.
This is our chance to go to the AFC Championship game. And the Patriots are like, yeah, enjoy it, because we're going to be owning this division like we have forever.
Yeah.
And then they go on a six-game win streak and they lead by a half game.
It's just this darn COVID. You know, it messed with all of us. And for the Patriots, that's what I love most about it. For the Patriots, the COVID was like, oh, well, you know what? We'll just take, you know, a lot of your defensive players will stay home this season. But they'll be back next year. No big deal.
Roger Sherman, writing in The Athletic, he does a column every single Monday on the winners and losers of the NFL. And he had a really, really great section on the Steelers-Ravens game. And the Steelers deciding to, the Ravens, I should say, deciding to go for two. But one of the things that he points out in this game was John Harbaugh's smart gamble. And here's a point that he brought up. Whenever I read a line that says something that went unnoticed by announcers, I'm always perked. You know, it always catches my interest, because if it went unnoticed by the announcers, it might have been unnoticed by me as well. So the Steelers late in that game, with under 2 minutes remaining, had the ball second and two on their own 13-yard line. All right. And safety Chuck Clark went offsides, and it gave the Steelers 5 yards and an automatic first down. And Roger Sherman at the Ringer writes that he believes that this was intentional by Chuck Clark, and intentional meaning John Harbaugh told him to go offsides. Clark has only been offsides 3 times in his career. The 2 times previously were intentional. That one time he lined up in the Bills' backfield in 2019, preventing a goal line snap, preventing Buffalo from snapping the ball before Baltimore was ready. And then in 2020, he tapped Patriots tight end Ryan Izzo on the head to give New England a first down in an attempt to get the Ravens the ball back with more time left on the clock. There is reasoning that Clark went offsides for this exact reason. Now, why would they do that if the Steelers had second down and two from the 13-yard line? Because that what he was doing was giving the Steelers first and goal, because in first and goal, you are only running 4 plays maximum, right? 4 plays. Now, obviously penalties can make you run more, but you are either getting a touchdown, you are either going to score in a field goal, or you are giving up the ball, right, on fourth down. So the thought process was, with 2 minutes remaining and a couple of timeouts, the Steelers are only going to run 4 plays. If they kick a field goal, we've saved time on the clock. If they score a touchdown, we've saved time on the clock. And those are the only 2 outcomes here. Or we get a turnover. But what we can't do is have the Steelers run to the goal line on second down and two, not get it, have third down, get 3 yards, and then a new set of downs as the clock is running, and then run it down to a point where they could kick the game-winning field goal. Does that make sense? That Harbaugh, and I start thinking to myself, these are the intricate, just sort of intricate things that pro football coaches, and even college coaches have to think about all the time. Second and two, 2 minutes on the clock, got a number of timeouts. What's the worst case scenario? What can we do here to help our situation? Ah, get a guy to go off sides. Why? Give him first down. Why? Because then they can only run four plays, and there's going to be something at the end of the three plays they run where they're either going to get a touchdown, field goal, or we get the ball. Okay, great. How much time will be left? Yeah, that's the great thing. They can't run two or three more plays behind that line of scrimmage that would get them an automatic first down and eat more clock. I thought this was brilliant reasoning, and he's probably right. The more I looked at that, again, on Twitter, they had some clips of that. It definitely looked intentional to me. That's pretty brilliant. But the other one was the decision on the Ravens to go for two, right? Look, they have Justin Tucker, a better kicker. I mean, Boswell is a good kicker, really good kicker, but he had missed an extra point earlier in the game. They could have played mano a mano to the Steelers in overtime. They have a better defense than the Steelers. Well, not better defense, better offense than the Steelers. Defensively, I'd give the edge to Pittsburgh in that game. T.J. Watt had a really good game. But I think if you're the Ravens, you could have played field position battle with them and used Justin Tucker in a way that Chris Boswell couldn't have been used for Pittsburgh. But he decided to go for two because he just felt his team was better. And they had the play. Mark Andrews was wide open, absolutely wide open,
yep,
and could not reel in that pass.
It's hard to tell. Like, you know, was it a poorly thrown ball? Did he run it like a half a yard further than he was supposed to? I mean, it's one of those places, like, you know what, it just wasn't meant to be. I don't think it was anyone's fault.
I've seen people on Twitter say that, give a good explanation for it, is that Andrews' positioning wasn't right. Like, when you're running a route, like, you can't be, how do I put this? You can't have your back. He's not running backwards. He's running sideways, and you can't do it if you're facing the thrower. You have to angle out more towards, like, just so picture it in the end zone. Picture his left shoulder pointed to the end zone. That's the way he should have been running. But instead, he was running more with his shoulders more parallel to the line of scrimmage. And that's not a good way to go after a ball to your left side. Had he been angled more running towards the pylon, he would have been in stride with the pass and probably caught it and went into the end zone for the 2-point conversion. But because he was almost completely turned while running sideways to Lamar Jackson, he did not have a chance of really catching that ball. Because Lamar rushed the throw when T.J. Watt got into the backfield.
Yeah, but as a Steelers fan, are you sitting there saying, it didn't matter if he caught it, we were going to stop him anyways?
Yeah, no.
No, he would have been in.
I think he would have been in. I think he would have ran in. So, and that would have won it, and that would have been another heartbreaking, horrible loss for the Steelers.
Yeah.
So.
Then you have the same thing going on with the Niners-Seahawks.
That Niners-Seahawks game, that was crazy too.
Yeah. Niners fighting all the way back, and then, you know what, just wasn't meant to be.
I thought the Seahawks were dead, man.
Is that another team that we're just kind of throwing our hands up like, whatever. I don't know who you are. I don't get you.
I don't know. There's a desperation when you lose three in a row. I get it. I mean, these guys are obviously competing hard and hard all the time. And, you know, again, at 4-8, maybe you're hoping 9-8 gets you in. Right?
But
right?
I also
so
think
you still have it.
It had a lot to do with the way they were losing.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, I mean, it's one thing to lose a game. Like if the Niners had completed the touchdown pass yesterday,
right,
and were able to get into the end zone last second play, and the Seahawks lost that game, we're not really burying the Seahawks. We're going, you know what? That's just the way it works sometimes. But it was, you know, last week where they just didn't even look like they belonged on the field.
Right, exactly. And Russell Wilson wasn't playing all that well, and Russell Wilson played really good in this game, right? I mean, he played really good. Two touchdowns, 230, you know, 30 of 37. Right. So, yeah, I think Seattle at home is a pretty good bet no matter who they play. But the Niners were rolling in pretty good and they had won three in a row, really righted their ship. A lot of confidence in their game. I just think Seattle was, you know, just knows this division, knows their opponents within the division and played in a desperate situation. But yeah, again, you can't really. It's hard to peg these things because they go. There's an ebb and flow that goes in so many different directions. But yeah, I mean, just I don't know. There's it. What was it towards the end where Garoppolo's pass was kind of deflected up in the air?
Yeah.
Yeah, it just kind of fell short.
Then it was like you looked at everyone, it was just like a mad scramble for everyone to try and catch it. Like right. All of a sudden you saw all these Niner players like, oh, and we almost had, I forget the lineman's name, Dolphins lineman. Thought we were going to have that moment again where he's just going to rumble into the end zone. The NFL is going to go, no, you can't do that.
No, you can't do that. It's funny because every time there's a tipped ball in the air, it does favor the defense, right? Because the defense is coming at you, and your offensive players are more, they're a split second late to the reaction of the tipped pass. So when a ball is up in the air, it does favor the defense. But so there isn't any worse feeling than when your offense, when there's a tipped ball in the air. Now you hope that by just the act of the football gods that your player is near it more, but it favors a charging in defense on a pass that fell short. That's coming up short because they're coming in on the attack and the ball is up in the air. But yeah, it's just, I don't know, man, when those balls come up in the air and my team's on offense, I always expect it to be picked off. I'm like, oh, tipped up. Yeah. Grab it. And, you know, Steelers get a lot of interceptions that way too, but you're right about the Seahawks again, 4-8, but you know, the Niners at 6-6 buried? No, you know, that was just a road loss, tough road loss. I still think, you know, there's still a team that's got some momentum. I just think this is so new, such new territory for all of us in sorting out what exactly is a good record with a 17 game schedule, given the level of parity that we're seeing. We're not really sure what that answer is. Remember too, it took a while. Even with the added two games from a 14-game schedule to a 16-game schedule, it took a while to realize 9-7 was going to be a potential playoff team, right? Yeah. Or an 8-8, you could get in, but maybe. So it is going to take us a little bit to sort a couple of years to see what on average should we be rooting for. I look at a team like the Dolphins at 6-7. Now, do I expect the Dolphins to run the table and go 10-7? No. But if they lose one game and they finish 9-8. Well, what exactly is 9-8 in the AFC? Is that good? Right? Is that good enough? I don't know, but in the next couple of years, we'll be finding out what you should be getting to be one of three wildcard teams. And I do think that's kind of interesting, because how many times have any of your teams ever been in a wild card situation? The team that's ahead of you is running away with the division. You're not going to catch them. But then you start looking around, and what do you usually root for as a wild card team, right? 10-6, right? That's about, right? That's what you're kind of hoping for. So when you look at your schedule over the final 5-6 games, you may be looking, how do we get to 10-6? 10-6 should be good enough, right? If you give me 10-6 now, I like my chances. What is that today? What is that what record is that today? Would you take 10-7? Yeah, I'd take 10-7, but would you take 9-8? I don't know. I don't know if I'd take 8-9. I would be really iffy on that, but 9-8 sounds like I could be in the thick of things. Again, there's so many teams today, so many that are in contention for this. Everybody in the West is still alive. Everybody in the North is still alive in the AFC. Three teams are alive in the East, and two teams are alive in the South, right? Three teams are alive in the East. Two teams are alive, one barely in the North. If you want to put the Vikings in there, 5-7. Tampa Bay, one team, but if you want to put 5-7 in there, all three are 5-7. The Arizona Cardinals are running away, but now you've got two teams in the West. So everybody is still in the picture reasonably.
Yeah.
Not in that same, well, we're 3-9 and if we win, you know, none of that.
Or we're 1-10-1.
Yeah. Exactly. Like we're 1-10-1 or we're 4-8. No, I mean like 6-6 is a reasonable record.
No, it is.
In the mix of this thing.
And I mean, and it is. It's kind of weird this year because we're, you know, it is uncharted territory. I mean, we would never think like a team that was 6-6 in even last year that they even have a chance. We're like, probably not.
Yeah, because it's 6-6, you're like, 10-6 is probably going to get you in. I don't know if you're winning four straight.
Four straight.
9-7 is iffy, and that means you got to go 3-1.
Yeah,
but you know, who knows?
8-8 is more likely, and usually there's only one 8-8 team.
Right,
like
usually
every so
work.
Often.
Exactly. All right, on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Wake up call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Sports Map Radio. You know what, Ron? Hold on. Before I get to what I was going to tell you, this hour of Wake Up Call is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Ready for a new home? Rocket can. We almost went 2 hours without mentioning that our good buddy Gardner Minshew won a football game yesterday.
That's it. We can't be fans anymore.
I know. We should have led. I was so excited about the Lions winning their first game of the year. I totally forgot that Gardner Minshew won a game yesterday. Good old Gardner Minshew.
I'm turning in my microphone and after this segment.
You know what Gardner Minshew is? I'm going to tell you right now. He is going to have
Uncle Rico. No.
Yeah, he's going to have a career as a good backup quarterback. He's going to have a nice long career in this NFL as a good backup quarterback.
Is he the new Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Yeah, in a way, but without he's really not your starter. He really
without the beard, but he has a stash.
We gave him every opportunity in Jacksonville. He just couldn't do it. He won that first game last year. They lost 15 in a row. That was it. But he's the guy that is good enough. He's prepared. He throws the ball pretty well. He completes a lot of passes. He doesn't throw a lot of picks, but he's not a superstar. He's not that next level quarterback. But he is good enough if you are just like, can you just keep this afloat for 2 or 3 weeks? He's good at that. He's not your answer, and he never will be. Jalen Hurts is the starter and should be because he's got better upside. But Minshew is going to make a nice living as a quarterback, a backup quarterback in this league, because I think he checks all the boxes of somebody that is built for that position.
Yeah, and that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing at all. So I think he's going to be around for a while, but it's good to see good old Gardner Minshew. Dressed as a fighter pilot yesterday, walking into MetLife Stadium, beating the Jets. That was great.